Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Dan. Hi, Connor.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
What's up, guys?
This Cub thing feels bad. This is like end of last year offensive constipation.
And you can look back to the start of this Cub season. If you're an optimist and say, hey, they worked themselves out of it. There was a period they won 9 out of 10 games, and eventually they'll come around. That's what Joe Maddon is saying. But here they come home, one for their last 34 with runners in scoring position.
Remember Anthony Iaposi said, we're not going to call it situational hitting. We're going to call it opportunity hitting.
Ah, I like that.
I love the rebrand.
Yeah.
Right? It's just one of these things where, you know, words matter as much as you want them to, but the idea that you're not in a situation, you are given an opportunity. That was not particularly opportunistic opportunity hitting.
So what do you make of it going forward?
I don't know.
Because
hit home runs.
It's a lineup that can produce.
Find the bottom third of the baseball and lift it.
Intelligent, in-depth sports talk for your workday.
What they are is they're out there, they're talking, they're yapping, and they're trying their best.
Bernstein and McKnight, middays on the Score.
Well, that was a little bit better. That was the opportunity hitting that you wanted as you get back home, and you hit a couple of home runs late, and things all good. And hey, look, Connor's back.
Hi.
From his bizarro trip. I'm looking at pictures of men in Speedos.
I tell you what, we did it all wrong and all right for about 4 days in Scottsdale. Treated that place like it was Las Vegas.
It's a bachelor party for a guy how old?
What is he, 28, 27, something like that.
So first marriage,
yeah,
bachelor
excited.
Party.
Oh, boy.
That's about right.
On the 33, about to be 34-year-old, that trip took a toll.
We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, home of the Tucson and Santa Fe Sport. Joe Sheehan going to join us at 10. J.J. Cooper, executive editor of Baseball America, will break down these new members of the Cubs and White Sox, assuming they sign, at 10:20, midway at 10:40. Some White Sox talk coming your way at 11. We have a pair of tickets to see Dead and Company at Wrigley Field coming up quick on June 14th. You got to be listening for the opportunity to win. 312-644-6767 is our phone number at WSCR The Score. Email us at Bernstein and McKnight at 670thescore.com. That's where you listen to us live. We stream at 670thescore.com. Please text or sext 67011. When you do, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein underscore MCK. He's at C1 McKnight. I am at Dan underscore Bernstein. Download the radio.com app.
It's so good to be back.
That way you can stream The Score on your mobile devices, interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. These cameras are the video feed directed by Brian Gertz at watch670thescore.com and Facebook Live. The producers today, Shane Reardon, Rick Camp, and in the back doing what he does, the executioner, Ray Diaz. Yeah, while Carlos Gonzalez made a splashy Cubs debut.
Oh, that's a hell of a play out in right field.
It really is.
That dude can go get it. It's a lot of fun to watch it. I was a little impressed with some of the all of the hoopla that came along while I was out this weekend, and Carlos Gonzalez was added to the major league roster. There were a bunch of, you know, there were like 25 of us down in Scottsdale, and the news spread through the room. We were all having a couple of beers, and Carlos Gonzalez, major league roster.
I think you made the point in the meeting. The fact is, he's not Mark Zagunas. He's not Jim Adusi.
No, I mean, and that's the addition here. I don't know how much he can really help you. I don't know how much he's got left in the tank. Carlos has always been kind of a polarizing player. How many consecutive seasons? He leads the league in consecutive seasons with his name at the very top of every trade rumor when it got down to the deadline and never went anywhere after he landed with the Rockies. I mean, he was that guy. And there's a reason for it. I think one of the biggest reasons for it is that if you look at Carlos Gonzalez's home road splits, you know, the Coors Field thing, and split it apart for his whole career, the difference is about a third of a player.
Yep.
It's a big difference. And there were all these questions as to whether or not he could continue or maintain or be an impact player when he wasn't at Coors Field. But I think when you look at the roster you've got, when you look at the continued absence of Ben Zobrist, the need to add in somebody in those corners, and maybe a little center field here or there in some smaller parks, Guy fits the bill defensively.
All left-handed bats, if you want. Schwarber, Hayward, and Cargo across the board there.
Yeah, that's, I mean, nice to have in the lineup. Good to have some balance. I just, if he's John Jay for you, like John Jay was.
With a little more pop, maybe?
Just an average dude, that makes a lot of sense. That's a guy you can actually throw into a lineup and space things out, as opposed to, like you say, Mark Zagunas or Jim Adducci, who's just...
Where is John Jay, by the way?
John Jay is still
on the White Sox,
rehabbing.
He's,
okay. Yeah, no, he's on the White Sox. He's still rehabbing. I didn't see him down at Extended Spring, though I did drive by Extended Spring Training just to see if I could see anything. Turns out nothing.
They don't let you buy a ticket and watch those games?
No, asked to move along. Thank you so much.
Really?
Well, I mean, we were, you know... It's been one of those things. We're just kind of sitting outside the ballpark.
Like a creep.
Yeah.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats championship hockey. Your Chicago Wolves are tied at one game apiece with the Charlotte Checkers in the Calder Cup Finals. The Wolves are home tomorrow, Thursday, Saturday, Allstate Arena for Game 3, 4, and 5. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. First of all, Carlos Gonzalez is indeed a Cub killer. And I didn't do the home road splits for where this stuff happened, but I always like to check if we sort of we think it feels like he did well against the Cubs. His career,
Ryan Rayburn out there, you know, killing White Sox.
Career against the Cubs, a 928 OPS against the Cubs. So yeah, he has done that to him. There's no question. And yesterday he talked about the end of last season.
This was
so there's a couple bites we're going to get into here. And I think it's fair to allow this to raise some questions about what went on and how it went on. And this is what Gonzalez noticed about their matchup with the Cubs at the end of 2018.
Sometimes it can be easy to, you know, take things for granted and forget about it. But this is a really good club. We have to understand that every day and go out there and compete because, you know, for example, last year when I came here for the wildcard game, you know, I noticed that there was something about the team that it wasn't the same in the past. So, you know, we took advantage of that. I think it was a really good game. You know, we went on extras, but we ended up winning the game. And I think a lot of that is because, you know, this seems like they were a little down and because they struggled at the end of the year. So it doesn't matter what the circumstances are. You just got to believe in yourself every day and, you know, continue to fight. And then a lot of great things happen after that.
Aha! Well then.
Saw that coming, did Carlos Gonzalez. I find it interesting because on one hand, this is a veteran player on the team he had been a big part of for almost his entire career, coming into a ballpark against a club that hasn't scored and can't score. I mean, Carlos mentioned it. Once you got into extras, you weren't getting a run. I mean, you just knew that. You were trying to manufacture everything you could. You gave at bats to a guy who would never hit before in his life because you were just stuck at that point in the lineup with the substitutions you'd made. So they kind of smelled that in the water. The real question, though, is this something that you saw just based on performance and production? Or is this something where you heard some things?
Great question.
Where guys got to talking. Because this league works that way sometimes. A lot of leagues do, but you start to hear a conversation. And when you have interviews like the one Kelly Krull did with Wilson Contreras right before this season started, where Wilson is very clearly vocalizing his give up last season, his checkout last season, it's hard for me to think that wasn't noticed by other people around the league, perhaps.
There's a reason you blew out a whole coaching staff again.
The offense broke,
right?
I mean, as much as we've made fun of, you know, polite fun, I guess, as best you can, about some of the 71 minutes that Theo came out with after the end of that season, the anger was real, the rage was real, and the brokenness of the offense was real, too. I mean, when you and Rich did a great job breaking it down yesterday with all the struggles they'd had with runners in scoring position, you get swept by the Cardinals, and really, they might have played better than the Cardinals 2 days out of three, maybe all 3 days. Just didn't hit with runners in scoring position. You've got a couple of balls from Anthony Rizzo that fall and maybe changes the entire series. The lineup can still be at times three or four guys working and looking around like Vincent Vega for everybody else. You know, I mean, that's kind of how this thing feels at times when it is broken.
And they've gotten it every once in a while. There has been that guy, whether it's Jason Hayward or Contreras for a while. And Contreras has been awful lately. I mean, what was he, 0 for 21?
0 for 21 going into the single yesterday?
Into the sixth inning. And I did find it interesting that there was some adjustments that he made. Granted, it's Trevor Cahill, and it's not, you know, wipeout stuff necessarily, but he got worked over in his second at bat.
Just hacked apart.
Just absolutely destroyed by that knuckle curve outside the zone low and away. And it was just that pitch. And we went back and watched these at bats because, yeah. I mean, I saw it at the time, but it was a very mature at bat in the sixth where he fouled off a couple of pitches. He got himself back from one and two, and it was that very same knuckle curve in the same spot that he stayed back on. He didn't collapse his backside. His weight didn't come forward like it did the previous two times he saw the pitch. And granted, Mike Trout misplayed it. You don't hear that said very often.
Not often.
But it was a barreled up, well-hit ball.
Yeah, and I think that matters. That matters quite a bit for me when it comes to watching guys like Wilson Contreras or even Javi Baez to a point, because the broadcast made a point of looking at how many at-bats for Javi have ended in strikeouts so for his last 20, 25 or so. It's almost half of them. I mean, that's a lot of strikeouts. And when you get to a point where you're having these non-competitive at-bats, these ABs where a breaking ball looks like it's completely unhittable regardless of where it's put, you know, that slider outside to Alfonso Soriano that he couldn't seem to lay off for the last 3 years as a Cub, that's an at-bat where if you're that core guy and you're not moving the baseball a little bit, if you're not using the opposite field the way Joe Maddon's talked about, the way they've been successful all season doing, that's where that strikeout feels like it's as bad as it could possibly be, much unlike the sabermetric approach of saying, strikeouts are strikeouts and they're going to happen.
773 Texter asks, did Carlos Gonzalez really say anything we don't know? Maybe we realized it after the season. He saw it up close, he says. Well, we know they were tight those last few games. Yeah, but that's the first time we've heard an opponent say, we saw it, we jumped on it, we knew it, we used it against them.
Blood in the water.
Felt it. And it's hard to do in baseball. It is really hard to do. It's not a basketball game. It's not a hockey game. You can't play baseball harder. So there are so many follow-up questions. Like you say, I think it's critical. Like, was this a grapevine thing?
Yeah.
Is this a friends texting friends, like, you know, the Bulls mutiny, Jim Boylan kind of thing where you know things are getting around the league?
Everybody's laughing at you
right,
in the concourse.
Everybody's laughing at you and all that, where you know that things are being said, where you've got buddies on other teams. And I would ask him, what did you see? Did you see an angrier than usual response after a strikeout? The evincing of frustration. Did you know what else did you see? That kind of thing. You know where? So,
and who else saw it? Because, like you say, in baseball, that is a very difficult thing to do, to find that blood in the water and then take advantage of it. Because your starter goes out there and gives up three straight hits, and it doesn't really matter what you felt going back into the game. Now you've got to play the one at hand. So you get to those extra innings where one run would have made a big difference because neither of those teams felt like they needed to score. And that does change the taste of it a little bit. And is it just Carlos Gonzalez who kind of smelled that around?
No way.
Is it just having MLB Network on in the clubhouse all season long and having it pounded into your brain, the narratives that, you know, we're going through and the struggles that the Cubs had? Because that's the part of last season that is, you know, married and connected here, is that the struggles existed. They didn't hit 40 games scoring just one run, but they also felt it. I mean, they changed habits. Wilson Contreras' interview means something and may not have been the only guy, perhaps not going through the steps that he needed to go through to make sure he could play the second half of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You asked what Carlos Gonzalez smelt, if there was really something extra to it. There is more.
Yeah,
cargo.
I also, we're going to get
to that. If you want to suss this out.
I do. I definitely want to hear it in just a second. All right. Don't forget what Wrigley Field does. And it is a unique amplifier of emotion. For better or for worse.
Anthony Rizzo said it.
Len Casper mentioned this years ago, that there is, it's sort of like the situation you feel as a fan about projecting your feelings on a game. I can't give you a scientific, rational explanation of it, but I definitely have felt the zeitgeist of Wrigley Field. I have felt the psychology of Wrigley Field. I have felt it amplify emotions for better or for worse. And I can't sit here and quantify it for you. I admit that I can't fully explain it, but I also admit that I would be lying if I didn't think there was something to how that building collectively can make everybody feel certain things. And it gets really heavy really fast. It can get also incredibly exciting and exultant and effervescent, but the other side of that is palpable. There's no question that weird things happen in that building. We are going to hear more of what Carlos Gonzalez had to say, and it raises some questions about how the Cubs were coached and managed and conducted themselves at the end of last year. And I think it informs a lot of what did happen before this season. So we'll get to the words of the newest Cub and one of yesterday's heroes coming up next. Keep it here. You've got the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It's an opponent you always notice that. You know, we came in and we know they were struggling. We know they were limping and, you know, they finished losing the division at the end of the year. You know, it seems like they were down. So you never want to show that at all to the opponent, and because that's exactly what we did. We take advantage of it. And but like I said, you just got to continue to work and believe in yourself and always keep your head up.
Whoa. They were down. You never want to show that to the opponent. We took advantage of it. So my first thought is, how? How do you take advantage of it? How do you sit in your meetings and say, hey, here's what we're going to do because they're showing how down they are emotionally?
Dan, I think some of that comes to just what Joe Maddon's been talking about when it comes to his offense. It's confidence. I mean, that kind of thing can matter for a club from here to there, especially when, just like the Cubs, the Rockies were struggling to score for most of that game. You know, you get to pace around the dugout. Maybe it's a tough moment for your team, and you get to yell over and over again, this is what we talked about. They're ready to break. We're not. We've got to have good at-bats here. We can do this kind of thing. It's you know, it can be kind of high school-y. It can be kind of rah-rah. But when you've got something to backstop the rah-rah, you know, when you've got evidence across the field from you and at bats that aren't going well and give ups that may or may not be happening, all that kind of stuff, it feels different. It just does.
I think too that Theo and his the biliousness with which he conducted that last press conference, don't you think part of him completely reasonably could have been thinking, what do I have Joe Maddon here for? What am I paying $5 million for? If he's not going to be an elite tactician, but he's known to be a manager of emotion and tone setter, this is where he should shine. This is where he should be instilling that level of confidence. This is where it shouldn't be curdling in the way that it is because Joe Maddon's the manager. That's one of my first thoughts is you have him, so you're not the team that has something like this occur.
Joe matters. Managers matter to me as soon as the last out of the game and the first pitch of the next one. You know, maintaining that confidence, writing out loud, that kind
exactly.
of stuff.
Exactly. Maintaining confidence.
And that, it evaporated last season. I mean, you could feel it. And I think you're right to point to that last press conference. God, we've done that so often this year, even in good times and in bad for this Cubs team so far. You know, a win yesterday against the Angels and things feel right again. You're rolling against a team that doesn't have great pitching and you've got a couple of nice efforts from John Lester. That's all great. And that reinstills some confidence. But boy, that anger and that the offense broke. I mean, you heard him say it. You heard kind of the despair that was in Theo's voice and the anger that was there too. You have to wonder if some of that was paired with the exit meetings that happened, with the perception of his team from around the league. I mean, if Carlos Gonzalez smelt it, if the Rockies could understand it, you don't think that works its way back to some of the higher circles?
The 312 says, Dan, I've listened to you since Belmont Avenue, and you always refuse to believe in terms like momentum or fire and passion. Now you say the Cubs lost their fire, passion, and momentum? No, not necessarily. I do think athletic
just the fire and passion.
I do think athletic confidence does matter. We saw it happen in front of us. Look, let's just look at the facts here. We saw their offense fail. We saw their offense dry up, and now we actually hear a new teammate and a former opponent describe exactly what he and his teammates noticed across from them. That's all. I'm not saying there's any magic or witchcraft out there.
But
that
you
I
have to remember
in.
Too. Even along with, if you want to yell and scream about the fire and the passion and the mojo or whatever, to go along with that is Wilson Contreras telling you and admitting and apologizing for not doing his work because that confidence went away from him. He wasn't lifting. He wasn't doing the kind of work needed to keep himself up in tip-top shape to be the kind of offensive force in the second half that he absolutely wasn't. That matters because some of this, the stuff in between the ears, once that starts affecting your preparation for the game, the actual things that you do, the lifting, the workouts, the scout work, all that stuff, now you've got something palpable that affects performance. That's how that in-between-the-year stuff matters. That's where front offices are trying to conquer the new frontier.
Listen to the way they were talking about draft picks yesterday. Listen to what they're saying. You can measure a whole bunch of stuff, but now it's the scout's job to figure out what people are made of. Bill on Capitol Hill, you're on the Score.
Hello, lads. How's the Empire?
Oh, it is in shambles, but that's how you like it.
Wouldn't happen any other way. I'm intrigued by your discussion about the sort of psychology of a losing team. Yesterday, I don't know if you heard on Lawrence's show, Steve Stone was eloquent as always when he was talking about how he is able to sort of prognosticate during a game. He was talking about the individual tells, you know, a base runner tenses up, that tells him that might go. A shortstop takes off his glove, that tells him that, you know, they're thinking about a pickoff or something like that. I'm wondering, excuse me, if, you know, if not only players can recognize that, but in the era of advanced metrics, it seems to me that that's a real opportunity to really liberate your scouting department, right? So if you're not married, you don't have to be married to your radar gun anymore if you're a scout because you've got AI to do that for you. Now you can start looking for those sort of psychological tells. Okay, he seems to have, like, he's favoring his ankle or something. And he can do really the advanced sort of, you know, deeply human but non-linear analysis. I mean, because look, I mean, the clearly fire and passion is a silly sort of way to think about it, but there are sort of human intuitions. I mean, we read each other. We're a social species, and we read each other, you know, through nonverbal communication all the time. And we evolved as a species. All the evidence is, you know, 50,000, 100,000 years before we even had language.
Sure, Bill. Look at the great poker players. Look at the really competitive poker players, where it's all math, it's all probability. And some of this stuff is just outside. Look, I'm going to fold this hand every time, or based on this guy's chip stack and my chip stack and what the blinds are. It's all hard math. And yet, every one of those players is going to tell you what separates. They all know the math. They all know the quant side. What separates them is exactly what you're talking about, that ability to read people.
Well, and it's even deeper than that because, I mean, I agree with you. And I think that that's actually sort of, I mean, I think that's actually the revolution that the stats geeks have brought to baseball, is that they've leveled that playing field, right? We are literally all reading from the same playbook now, right? There's not a fan in the world, from the lowest to the GM, who doesn't understand at least roughly what WAR means. Mm-hmm. But now the question is, and given that it's put a premium on data. So there's no such thing as bad information anymore. What's that shortstop doing? You know, why is he tipping his cap that way? There's no such thing as bad information anymore. And it feels like that's the next area here, is that sort of deeply human, you know, the emergence at the same time of team shrinks to help players going through stress and everything. I mean, that feels like the next sort of phase in this. Anyway, lads, be well.
You too. Good call. Thanks, Bill. As always, great stuff.
I think it's an interesting way to look at it. The math has become baked in, and the intuition is now the thing you work on. Used to be the opposite way. Used to be a scout would tell you. I mean, that's the famous line from the sabermetric everything. I know when a kid's got it. Your kid has it. But you don't know.
Right. You clearly don't.
You don't know. You don't know. And you never did know. And there were a bunch of old guys that came before you that told you that you knew and that only you could divine whether or not this player was going to turn into somebody. Now you've got scouting departments. You have front offices mandating play dates between your scouting department and your nerd department before the draft to make sure that everything checks up. That's a given. You know, that checking your math, quite literally and figuratively, that's a given in baseball at this point, in front offices, whether you like it or not, that's where things are going. And now the kind of that new cutting edge frontier is trying to determine what you can about the mental acuity and player development
side
of things.
It's beyond that, too. As we talked to, you know, with Jonah Carey on Friday, it's not necessarily about what does this kid have. It's what upon him can we build? What can we construct? What can we engineer? We think we can get another 4 miles an hour of velocity out of him once we get him on the cameras. Or we think a swing plane change can turn him into a completely different hitter. That now we've added almost literally another dimension to scouting, a different axis to scouting, to say he doesn't do this yet, but his body type and his physiology, his the biokinetics suggest he can look like this.
Or it's as simple as, is this kid too much of an asshat to want to change the swing for us? You know, I mean, that's what it, if Christian Yelich were anything other than the terrific human he seems to be, And somebody looks at him and goes, well, you know, I think you get better if you just, you know, move the shoulder down here a little bit. If he's that stubborn old school baseball guy that's just, nah, this is the way I've done it all the time. I'm not changing for anybody. Then what do the Brewers have?
This segment is brought to you by Eon Clinics. Joe Sheehan is loaded for bear with baseball information, talking Cubs and Sox and draft, and looking over some of where these teams stand as we get a little closer to midseason and we get closer to jockeying for position and what could be done at the trade deadline.
A little bit of a free agency part two as well, with two players now connected, maybe in rumors to teams. There's a couple of guys that just cost money, might affect one or two ball clubs.
All that coming your way next. Joe Sheehan on Joe Day. Sheehan at 10, Madden at noon. That's Tuesdays on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.